Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution and production made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. If you have questions about a professionally managed retirement portfolio, take a look at these carefully designed programs on InvestTalk.com. KPP Financial's newest investment program is called Disciplined Equity. It focuses on growth for maximum returns. This strategy offers consistent exposure to the equity markets by focusing on only high-quality companies listed on the U.S. exchanges. Although the portfolio is concentrated, we limit exposure to any one sector of the market. Click on the Investments tab on InvestTalk.com to find out more about it. End of commercial. Now today's InvestTalk podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is a special edition, Tuesday edition of InvestTalk, because I'm doing it, not Steve. So it's October 25th, 2016, and our aim is high, and that is to help you grow and build on the foundation of how to manage your portfolio properly for growth and for the proper amount of risk as well. Now, just like your risk in life, Investing risk needs to be gauged in some way. You need to keep a close watch on it. It has to be the appropriate amount of risk. You know, think about like when you're driving, right? If you're an aggressive driver, you tend to drive faster, and you're probably comfortable with that amount of risk because that's the way you drive. Others maybe are more cautious. They drive slower, right? So the amount of speed that you take in the car can reflect the amount of risk you're willing to take on the road. So same with investing. How fast are you willing to go? How fast are you able to go without feeling anxious, right? If you're a conservative driver, and you're going 95 on the freeway, you're probably going to feel anxious. If you're an aggressive driver and you're okay with high speeds, 95 is not that big a deal. So everyone's a little bit different. And you need to gauge how fast is your portfolio going. And that's one of the reasons why we use our risk analysis tool. It's free on our website to help gauge the comfort level of our clients and our listeners of how much risk they're willing to take. And at our upcoming Saturday Morning Wealth Conference, we're going to talk about adjusting your portfolio to change that is happening throughout the world, really. So we're going to talk about that. How will the election outcome affect the market? And by that time, we'll know the outcome because it's on the 12th of November. And the election's on the 8th of November, so we'll have a good sense of what is going to happen in 2017. And you know, there's changes with global politics. It's not just here in America. There's changes with global central banks, which is a huge game changer. And obviously, there's changing flavors in the market. And we're going to build our case for moving from growth investing, I know it's exciting, into value investing. And there may be many growth stocks that made big runs over the past few years, and some have held on to those gains, others have not, right? And you have to be able to be aware of the ones that can ride out the storm of maybe a bumpy economy when times are more appropriate for value investing stocks. So we're going to lay out those reasons, and I think you will agree. Now, in any market, all investors must analyze how those companies achieve their growth, right? Growth companies achieve their growth, or whether or not they can hold those customers for the long term, whether that's sustainable, whether the valuations they're trading at make sense. Now, in a competitive marketplace, all industry-leading companies must contend with competitors trying to unseat them. That's the nature of business. There are various reasons a company may be able to maintain their market share, and that comes down to different competitive advantages. So for investors, the goal is to identify how easily a competitor can eat away at market share. Companies with massive growth must slow down simply to the law of large numbers. Growth cannot happen in growth above the rate of the economy cannot happen indefinitely. Otherwise, you become the economy. That's just how numbers work. Markets become saturated at certain points. Revenue growth starts to run out. Additional revenue opportunities run out. And that causes growth to slow. And when that happens, high PE, high price to sales, high price to book stocks, they tend to come back down to earth. So you have to understand how different types of what are the risks involved with different types of investment strategies. And growth investing is different than value investing. And you need to understand that. We're going to talk about that. So we're going to go further. We're going to go into some further analysis of today's market in terms of growth versus value that hopefully give you a clear picture of how important it is to anticipate and not to anticipate, but see the shift that's going on. It's happening. So join us Saturday morning, November 12th, 9 a.m. to noon in San Jose, California. It's called How to Prosper in a Year of Change 2017. You can sign up online on investtalk.com. Now, do you have a question about growth stocks versus value stocks? Maybe junk bonds versus treasury bonds? Maybe commodities of various types, oil versus gold versus natural gas? Versus maybe agriculture? We can talk about any money questions that are on your mind today. Let's go to our 24-hour listener line right now, though. This is a Q&A line for you to call in and ask your questions, and we will answer it on the next show. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hi, my question is, I was just wondering if you could explain the formula of how to evaluate a stock when it's undervalued or it's overvalued. I know you guys explained it on the radio. Explain it so fast. I was wondering if you maybe explain it a little slower. And where did you get that information from? Is there like a website or maybe get it from a newspaper? And how do you get it? I just wanted to could please explain it again. Thank you for answering my question.
All right, it's a great question. It's a question that will plague every investor till the end of time. How do you value a stock? It's very difficult. You know, we use a quick and dirty method of what's the revenue, what's earnings growth, times next year's earnings, and, you know, that will give you the price. It's a very quick and dirty. It's not 100% accurate. No model is, but it's a simple way to value a stock. Now, I like to go a little deeper. I like to look at cash flows. I think that's very important because earnings can be manipulated where cash flows are very difficult to, right? I like to look at what the cash flow is from operating activity, operating cash flow, because there's cash flows from investment activities. There's cash flow from financing activities, meaning money coming in from either issuing stock or selling bonds, etc. But I like to look at their core business, because that's what's more sustainable, right? So what's the operating cash flow, what the operating cash flow yield is? So divide that operating cash flow divided by the market share of the company. That gives me a yield of some kind if they have positive operating cash flow, which if they didn't, I wouldn't invest in the company. So that's a good place to start. That's usually where I start, okay? And then I go into, okay, what's their dividend? Why are they covering that dividend by cash flow? By earnings, what's that ratio? Then I look at competitors. What are competitors tend to be trading at? And what's the growth of that company versus other competitors? If they're growing faster than other competitors, okay, it's okay to trade at a little bit of a premium from a price to sales standpoint, a price to earnings, price to book. Okay, then I go look at the book value. Is this a company that's filled with intangible assets, meaning that book value is based on estimates of the value of their brand, which is kind of nebulous? Or is this a capital-intensive business, meaning the book value is based on owning lots of plants, property, and equipment, buildings? That's easier to value, has more concrete value to it. As you can see, brands can value can erode rather quickly. Right. Well, it was BlackBerry's value of their brand back in 2005. Very high. Just a few years later, it was very low because Apple stole their thunder. Look at Chipotle. Great brand value. You have a big health scare that they really haven't shaken yet. That gives me, it's going to adjust the value of that brand down. So those things can erode rather quickly. Whereas plant property equipment doesn't really erode really as much. Doesn't it might in an economic downturn, et cetera, but generally it stays pretty steady. So see how complex they can get? It's nothing simple in this business. Nothing is simple in the process of investing. It is complex, and you need to have the knowledge and know-how and study what is happening in the marketplace today. Now, I'm glad you're with us today. We talked about risk and appropriate risk and how much risk is right for you. So get your score. It's an actual number assigned to you that helps you measure your investments against your capacity for risk. Use our free risk analysis tool right there on investtalk.com. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Online stockbrokers, how to choose the right one. We're going to talk about that today. Do you have a brokerage account? Do you strive to open your own brokerage account? Maybe you just have 401ks or IRAs. Well, having a taxable brokerage account can be important, and even just opening an IRA at a broker can be important, and we're going to talk about how you choose the right one. We're also going to discuss GDP. What is GDP? Why is GDP so important to investors? You know why? Let's talk about that. Then what can we learn from some NFL stars who have lost kind of their shirt recently? On a lot of investment deals, and there's some lessons to be learned that hopefully the NFL will teach their players, and not just the NFL, but this happens in Major League Baseball, this happens in NBA. There's a lot of sharks out there, and most of these athletes are unsophisticated investors, and you know they tend to be very confident in their ability on the field or on the court, or on the ice, wherever they're playing. And a lot of times that carries over to the investment world when they're really not that sophisticated. So they tend to run into problems. And we're going to talk about what those are and what you can learn from it. And then why corporate America's debt is a major risk. I didn't get to that yesterday. Hopefully I will today. So that's what's on my mind. That's what I'm going to discuss. But you drive the conversation. So I want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART is how to get through and ask your questions on today's show, and I urge people to do it sooner rather than later. We have about 35 minutes left in the show, so get your call in. All right, now the Dow was down about 53 points today. The S&P down 8, NASDAQ down 26. It was a rough, almost not a terribly rough day, but certainly was trending lower throughout the day. A lot of economic news, a lot of earnings news. You had Apple after hours. That was down a little bit. Chipotle down a little bit. Edwards Life Science was down huge on their earnings announcement. So a lot of earnings coming out this week, and that's certainly not helping the market. And I still expect the market to break lower rather soon on the back of poor earnings, but also on the back of China devaluing their currency as well. I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein, and this is Invest Talk. Remember, we're not all about stocks and bonds. If you have a question about real estate, transitioning from a large home to a smaller one, how do you get organized in your retirement? How do you manage risk? All these things are topics that we can discuss this hour, but you need to call with your question. I need to hear from you. I need to know what's on your mind. Give us a call, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278. That's our Invest Talk 24/7 listener line.
Hey, I love your show. I was just trying to find out if you thought Nike was at a good spot to buy in. Seems like it's kind of low, and its forward PE is probably in the lower range in the last 5 years. Just seeing what your thoughts were. Thanks a lot.
is looking at Nike, one of my favorite companies. I own a lot of Nike gear. I play a lot of basketball, so Nike kind of owns the space, and certainly a great company in a lot of respects. However, it's been in a downtrend for a little while, and that is worrisome. And I think it will continue in a downtrend for the near future. It is kind of trading in its five-year P range on the, near the low side. The five-year P range is 18 to 33. It's at 23 now. It's not all the way to the low end, but you see revenue and earnings growth kind of decelerating a little bit, and I don't like that. Only yields 1.3%, so not a huge dividend payer, but over time it does tend to hike its dividend, which is a great thing. But I think at these levels, it's still not cheap enough. Operating earnings yield is still less than 5%. That does not excite me. So I need to see this lower, and I would say substantially lower. And like I said, I think it will continue lower. Broke major support around the 53 level. Now it's trading around, 51. I think this is certainly headed for 45. That would be a pretty big support level in the 45 level. The next support level would be around $38, $39 a share, and absolutely gigantic support would come in around 32. So I think sub 40, this is great. But at these levels, I still don't think it's cheap enough. But like that you have it on your watch list, I think Nike is a company that should be on everyone's watch list for its brand strength, its consistency over time. And I think they do a great job, but they're getting heat from the likes of Under Armour. Adidas assigned a plethora of young NBA players that I think could be stars and might take some of their thunder, kind of the way Steph Curry has done with Under Armour in his shoe. So Nike's going to have to battle, but I think the strength of their brand will stay strong over the long term. So keep on your watch list, but wait till under 40 to pick it up. It's at 51.05 today. Now, how do you pick a broker? Everyone has different needs. We're actually in the process of looking at new brokers for our clients. Because there's a lot of good ones out there, and we have to continually look. It's part of our duty as a fiduciary is to find the best broker for our clients on a consistent basis. And you should be doing the same for yourself. Now, one in five Americans surveyed in 2013 only one in five could correctly identify the type of account needed to trade stocks online. Only one in five. 20%. That's pretty bad. 7.6%, even lower than that. So let's start with the basics. Now, your 401k, that's not really a brokerage account. Now, there are brokerage windows, there are self-directed brokerage accounts that you can opt into within a 401k, but not every plan offers. Actually, most plans don't offer it because there's added costs involved. So that tends to just be a 401k account. Now, IRAs, you know, you set up an IRA account, just an account type. A lot of people confuse IRA as an investment. An individual retirement account is not an investment. It is simply a type of account, and that can be set up at a bank, right? But that's not really a brokerage account, right? You can set up an IRA at a brokerage company, and then you can buy all types of things, just like any brokerage account can: stocks, bonds, mutual funds, currencies, futures, option contracts. All depends on the broker. Okay. Now, first, you should be looking at lowest fees and trading commissions. Typically, most brokers charge between $5 and $10 per trade for stock, options, exchange-traded funds, etc. Some companies charge a transaction fee for buying mutual funds. You should try to avoid that. You should only buy NTF, no-load mutual funds. Some brokers offer commission-free ETFs. It's becoming more popular these days. And those NTF mutual funds, commission-free ETFs, those are very attractive, especially for small accounts. If you have less than $100,000, no commissions is pretty attractive. So look for those features if you don't have a ton of money. Okay. Now there's E-Trade, there's Charles Schwab, TD Ameritrade, and there's a lot more out there. TD Ameritrade just bought Scottrade. There's a ton of different brokers out there. So there's a lot of choices that you can make. Now, if you only make a few trades per month, The commissions may not matter. There are other things like how much support are you getting from a human? Do you want to talk to somebody who's educated about the market? Educated about investing? You can run questions by? Are you strong enough and you just need research? You need data. And a lot of brokers offer that. So you're only doing a couple trades a month. It's a couple dollars more or less on commissions is probably not going to change your performance if they can help you make better decisions. Okay. Some companies charge inactivity fees. Understand that as well. If you're a type that you're going to open it, buy a few things, and probably not look at it very often, that's something to consider as well. There's always minimums, and you can start out with as little as a dollar in some brokers. So it's all about what your needs are, and you need to be honest with yourself about that. Now we're open to your money questions and comments at 888-99-CHART. So you can get through right now. I'm Justin Klein, and this is Invest Talk.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. If there's ever a question you'd like Steve or Justin to answer privately, send them a note. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Justin, and they will get back to you. And now more Invest Talk. You're listening to Invest Talk for Tuesday, October 25th. These short-term floating rate municipals typically are AA or AAA rated, and the coupon resets every week. Income investors just got a gift from the regulators. That's our topic next time. Have a question for Justin right now. 888-99-CHART is how to reach him from anywhere in the USA.
Hey, Steve or Justin. I listen to you on the podcast. I had a question about Seadrill and Rig. My question is about their risk of going bankrupt against their book value. Seadrill, SDRL, has a book value per share of 19, and they're trading at around $3 a share. If they go bankrupt, does that mean that you make money on them going bankrupt because they're worth more if they sold everything off than if they stay in business? Same question goes towards RIG, R-I-G, or Transocean. They have a book value per share of around $40, and they're trading at $10. So, again, is that a value play? I'll listen to you on podcast. Thank you.
That's a great question because simple logic would say that's true. You know, book value is supposed to be a reflection of what the liquidation value of the company would be if you just said, okay, we're shutting everything down and we're going to sell off all the assets. And if it's trading below book value, then in theory, you should be able to make money on that, right? So if, for example, RIG, R-I-G, Transocean is trading at 0.25 times book. So in theory, they would shut down operations, sell other assets, and you would make four times your money. Well, that's not exactly the case in reality. You know, there's theory and then there's reality. And the reality is that while the book value might say the assets on the balance sheet are worth one thing, what the marketplace says those assets are worth are another. And what the market is saying is that Transocean and Seadrill are in a big risk of going bankrupt. The amount of debt they have in their balance sheet. You know, these are offshore contract drillers. And at these price levels of oil, it's not quite economical to be drilling offshore. And, you know, that puts there's a lot of risk in these names. Now, Seadrill is much higher risk, has a lot more debt than Transocean, RIG, but it certainly, both are kind of on the high risk side. Now, in reality, the value of the assets on their book are going to be a lot less than what their book value is, right? So let me give you try to simplify something down to something more personal, okay? So say you have a home, right? And you can depreciate your home. Let's say it's an investment property. you bought it for $100,000, you bought it for $500,000, and you depreciate that property. Every year you take depreciation, and the depreciation book value goes down on that property. Okay, let's say there's a flood, you don't have insurance under, and it just practically destroys the home. Say it does destroy the home, and now it's just land. Okay, and now that land, if you were to sell it, is worth $200,000 because there's no home on it anymore. The flood wiped it out. Okay, but on your book value, it's still maybe worth $450,000, even though you've depreciated some of it. Your book value is wrong. Reality is something different, and that's kind of what's happened with the oil industry. It's what happened in the banking industry, 2008. It's when it comes down to mark-to-market accounting. Why there's a big difference. No such thing anymore. So both Seadrill and Transocean are theoretically trading below book value, but in reality, they're likely to go bankrupt at some point if oil prices stay this low. And those assets are going to be sold, and the first person that is, or first group of investors that are going to get their money back are debt holders, way before you as an equity shareholder. So don't think that these are safe plays. They're very high risk. Now, if oil returns to $70, $80 a barrel and stays there on a consistent basis, these things are gonna fire to the upside, because all of a sudden, the bankruptcy chances are much, much lower. Okay, so I hope that's a good explanation. I like where you're looking at it. It shows that you understand balance sheets, you understand book value, you understand kind of what they mean in general. But in reality, what the textbooks would tell you, or the theory behind it would tell you, is simply just not the case in extreme situations like this, where oil prices have made their business uneconomical. Now let's get to a very interesting story. Now, over the weekend, there was a 60 Minutes report on a bad investment wrong, which would be a bad investment, right? And this was made by some NFL stars. And there was a registered advisor named Jeff B. Rubin. He was the president of financial services firm Pro Sports Financial, Inc. And he lost about $43 million for his clients. A couple of them were Washington Redskins tight end Vernon Davis. The other was former New England Patriots running back Fred Taylor, among many other professional athletes and NFL players. And the reason he lost is because he didn't research his investments properly. He didn't disclose properly. What happened was he placed his clients' money into an investment related to electronic bingo games to be installed in a new casino called Country Crossing in Alabama. Well, as it was being constructed, the anti-gambling unit of the government came in and shut down the business. Shut down the electronic bingo games. So suddenly it's not worth any money. Now there's a bunch of litigation regarding this. It's certainly not a pretty situation. And, you know, professional athletes, and I talk to people all the time, you know, their paychecks are big, but what you have to realize is their skills erode quickly. Their careers tend to be pretty short. And their 20s and 30s are filled with times that are typically used to build a career, right? Build knowledge to make money in your 40s, 50s, and 60s. Not really the case for these professional athletes. So making good investment decisions with that money is extremely important. If you lose millions, that can really set you back, and you're no longer living the lavish lifestyle. So what are the lessons that you can take away? One is there are no guarantees. Okay. Any advisor making big promises about returns, they're probably misleading you. And they're not discussing potential loss. So be very skeptical if advisors are not talking about risk. And that's why we talk about risk all the time on the show, because that is, it's equally a part of the investment picture as is the upside of investing. Number two, know what type of professional advisor you're working with. Now, brokers earn commissions on their recommendations, and they usually register with FINRA, which is a self-regulator with member advisors and firms that sell these securities. Now, there's registered investment advisors like us, KPP Financial. That's what we are. We're registered either with the state or the SEC, and we're held to a fiduciary standard, which requires us to act in the best interest of our clients. That's just the statute we're under. So we must talk about our conflicts of interest, etc. So that's why we don't collect any commissions. We're fee-only advisors. And I think that's what everybody should work for or work with, is because why would you want that conflict of interest of working with a broker when you could work with an advisor who doesn't have that conflict of interest? It's pretty simple. Number three, check the broker's online paper trail. There's Broker Check. Just Google Broker Check. FINRA has it. It's a free tool, and it gives a background for all brokers that are registered with FINRA. It will show if they've been, if there's been any arbitration, if the termination, what their firm registration is, what exams they've taken, detailed reports, etc. So if you run Ruben's report now on BrokerCheck, it shows that he's been barred by the SEC and has six disclosure events, including one customer alleging that he set up a life insurance policy in his name without proper signatures, without his signature. Now, we as a registered investment advisor, we file an ADV form, and that's our disclosure that must be filed every year, and you can look that up. Same type of disclosures. Then the last one is, insist on getting these disclosure statements from the broker. Ask for them. You shouldn't need to go and search the internet and do background checks. You know, we send it to all of our clients. Okay? So look at all agreements. Read thoroughly. Don't just assume. Okay? Now, in Ruben's case, he didn't do any disclosure until well after they handed over a bunch of money. So get these disclosures beforehand. And those are hopefully some lessons you can learn from their mistakes that they made the hard way. Now, on the first day of November, Steve will be in San Ramon for individual retirement reviews. It's a good time to get that accomplished before the holidays set in. His time slots do fill up fast. I know he has a couple slots left, so if you'd like to meet with him on November 1st in San Ramon, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, and then Portfolio Review.
What does an InvestTalk insider know that you don't? Well, maybe something that she saw on one of the dozens or more webinars, or the easy-to-read info sheets written by Steve and Justin. Why not give yourself an advantage? Sign up on InvestTalk.com. It's free. Just click on the InvestTalk tab and then Insiders.
My name is Vijay. I really enjoy your show. What is your views on long-term insurance? Thanks. Bye.
I think he's asking about long-term care insurance. I believe. He didn't say care, but I'm assuming that's what he's talking about. I think it can be right for some people. For the most part, if you have a healthy nest egg, then I think you should be able to sustain yourself on your own, and you shouldn't need this long-term care insurance. Every contract is different. Everybody is different. If you have a long history of living a long time, meaning your family lives a long time, it's probably more right for you because you'll probably have a longer period where you'll be in maybe a sedentary state where you're not getting around much and you just need to be cared for, et cetera, at the end of your life. Where others, maybe your family tends to die earlier. And for you, it's probably not as appropriate. Steve was in the insurance industry for decades, And he's not a big fan of it. He's not a big fan of long-term care insurance. So I trust somebody who's in the industry and has seen the pros and the cons, and he's just not a big fan of long-term care insurance. So I'm going to go with Steve's opinion. Now, on the first, actually, let's go to GDP. Why is GDP important? You know, you hear the reports every quarter. What was GDP last quarter? And do you understand it? Do you understand what GDP is? How it's calculated? Well, first off, we all kind of know it's the primary indicator, primary gauge of the health of a country's economy. It represents the total value, total dollar value of all goods and services produced over a specific time period. So you can think of it as the size of the overall economy. Now, measuring GDP is a little bit complicated, and there's kind of two approaches. One is the income approach, and this calculates total compensation to employees, profits for corporations, and non-incorporated firms, and less any taxes and subsidies. Okay, that's not used that often. The more common measure is the expenditure method. It's a more common approach, and this is pretty simple. Total consumption, which is the vast majority of the economy, 65-70% is total consumption by individuals. Then you have investment, mainly by corporations. Government spending, which certainly goes up and down depending on how Congress and government is feeling. And then net exports, which in America tends to be a drag on GDP because we import more than we export. So that's net exports, okay? Now, when the economy is healthy, you typically see low unemployment, wage increases, and business demand for labor to meet a growing economy. Now, a bad economy clearly means lower profits for companies, which in turn means lower stock prices, and investors really worry about negative GDP growth because of that. So if GDP growth decreases for two quarters in a row, that is called a recession. And that is why GDP is so important, because it's a very broad general measure of what type of economic activity is going on in the economy. Let's go back to expenditure method. Total consumption. Are consumers spending? If consumers spend more, corporations tend to make more profits. Are companies investing? Well, B2B investment or spending is a big part of the economy, right? If they're companies are investing in their business, they're making more investment, then that's more economic activity, more profits for other businesses. If government's spending more, that's more money out there for companies to get their hands on and make. Okay, so it's very simple, but I think it's something everybody should understand. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. Now you have a partner in managing your 401k at work. It's a new program from KPP called My 401k. So to find out more about it now, you can go to investtalk.com, click on the investment tab, and then My 401k. Let's try to answer one more question before our hour is up. We still have 5 minutes left in the show, so if you want to get your live call in, you better do it ASAP. But we're going to go to our 24-hour listener line number right now, 888-99-CHART, as always. And here's a call from James in San Francisco.
Yeah, I had a question about earnings, and maybe it's just me and my poor stock picking, but it seems, and this is a stupid question, admittedly, but how does a stock make new highs? And I ask this question because I notice great earnings come in on a lot of stocks that I pick, yet they hit this resistance, and they don't seem to make new highs. However, I do know that in the year 2000, there was a lot of momentum in these highs, and there was a lot of irrational exuberance, and maybe that's why these new highs aren't being made. So that's my long-winded question.
How are new highs made? Well, new highs are just simply made by buyers outnumbering sellers for long enough and pushing the price up and up and up. And, you know, earnings tend to have something to do with that, but you need to have buyers that are confident in the economy, confident in that business, confident in management, confident that earnings are sustainable. New highs are great, and it's always healthy to see new highs. We haven't seen, you know, we briefly pushed above new highs in the S&P recently, but we haven't really pushed past them with gusto. And that's kind of a worry. It'd be if we break down from here, that's called a false breakout. So, you know, new highs are just simply more buyers than sellers. I don't know how to explain it much better than that. And in 2000, there were a lot of confident people. And sometimes new highs just mean that people are overconfident. It depends on every situation is different. Sometimes it's new highs are fantastic and values are fine and the economy is still growing and there's not a lot of excess in the economy and they're great. Other times not so much and you have issues, underlying issues, and can soon turn into a bear market. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about corporate debt. And is that America's major risk? And some strategists are sounding the alarm right now over the state of corporate America's balance sheet. And the reason is companies are spending more than they're bringing in and near record amounts. Their spending is exceeding their cash flow. Net debt continues to increase at a rapid pace. And that's an issue because that can only last for so long. And what have they done with it? And why is this happening? Companies have used debt, for the most part, to repurchase their own stock, which helps their bottom line, helps their earnings per share. Because when you're calculating earnings per share, what's the last word in earnings per share? It's share. How many shares are outstanding? And when companies buy back their shares, they're retiring shares, meaning the denominator in that equation goes down. Okay, so it's a simple calculation and it's a simple way for companies to make themselves look like profitability is going up, when in reality earnings, total earnings and total cash flows aren't changing too much, but underlying earnings are, because number of shares are going down. But what they're doing is leveraging up their balance sheet, adding more debt to their balance sheet that really is going to hinder them longer term, because they got to pay back that money eventually. Now, there's a high demand for corporate credit because there's a little concern about the short-term coverage in the market, meaning the amount of earnings covering interest payments. It's very high. It means they don't have a lot of default in the near term, or default risk in the near term. But the problem is long term. What happens when you hit a recession? All of a sudden, earnings go down dramatically, or maybe even go negative. And all of a sudden, they still have to pay the interest on that debt. So this is where really the froth in our markets still lie. The level of corporate indebtedness is an issue. Okay, and corporate profits have been in decline now. It's going to be going on 6 straight quarters. Now, our time is up for this hour. Remember to save the date for our Saturday Morning Wealth Conference coming up on November 12th. If you sign up by midnight November 5th, you'll get $10 off the $45 ticket price. And you can sign up online on investtalk.com. I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein, executive vice president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. For Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, we thank you for listening today. Let's meet up again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.